thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Today, a council member in one of America's most progressive cities finally joins the rest of us in reality. Also, a Republican congressional candidate in Washington State has his Facebook page taken down. Or does he? Plus, I respond to backlash over my Friday podcast and what some apparently believe is me being too hard on the fringes. Brandi Cruz, thanks for listening to the Undivided Podcast. You know, I struggle sometimes when I've criticized politicians and then some point down the road, they come around to the very ideas that I was criticizing them over. I struggle with whether to give them a round of applause or to reiterate that it shouldn't have taken them so long to make these realizations in the first place. I want to take you to the city of Seattle. I talk about Seattle a lot. Obviously, I was a reporter in Seattle for years, but also I think the progressive ideals in Seattle have become synonymous with some of the worst ideas of the Democratic Party at large and sort of this acquiescence to progressive ideals that have led to more crime, more homelessness. And Seattle is just, I think, tied up in a little bow, the epitome of some of these challenges that come along with progressive policies of decriminalizing things, soft on drugs, et cetera. Before we get to what I'm talking about, I want you to become acquainted with Seattle City Councilman Andrew Lewis. I want to give you a little background on him. He's very young. In fact, he was born a year after me, so he's even younger than I am. I think he's like 32. And he has been in office in the city of Seattle since 2019. Now, when Andrew Lewis was on the campaign trail in 2019, leading up to the election, I was moderating a conversation among candidates that was held by the Seattle Police Officers Guild. So obviously the topic at hand was public safety. At the time in 2019, we were dealing with challenges even then about recruitment and retention of good police officers. That is a problem that obviously was exacerbated during the defunding debate in 2020 and 2021. And now we have these record low numbers of police compared to, you know, the population in Seattle. But at the time in 2019, I was asking the candidates whether they supported hiring more police officers. And Andrew Lewis, then a candidate for Seattle City Council, was unequivocal.
We need to hire more police officers in the city. I see on a daily basis that there's parts of our city where we don't have the staffing numbers to have effective community policing strategies and deter the kinds of crimes of opportunity that are prolific.
It was interesting then that only 6 months later, after the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, and when Seattle became at the forefront of the conversation nationally around defunding or divesting in the police department, Andrew Lewis joined 7 of 9 Seattle City Council members in pledging to defund the Seattle Police Department at 50%. Yes, the man who 6 months prior had said this on the campaign trail while he was asking citizens to elect him.
We need to hire more police officers in the city.
Turned around a half a year later, gave in to the demands of a mob, and began an effort to strip money from the Seattle Police Department and to put it into community alternatives to policing. Luckily, the Seattle City Council eventually came to its senses a few months later. They didn't have much of a choice because they realized it would be nearly impossible to cut 50% from SPD's budget virtually overnight. Of course, by then, the damage was done. The city's first Black female police chief, Carmen Best, resigned in protest. Hundreds of officers had already fled the agency, worried about their career prospects there, also not wanting to work for politicians who hated them. So here you have a city council member, just about 30 years old at the time this was happening, young guy, and in the course of 1 year went from saying we needed more police to saying that he wanted to defund the police at 50%, to then joining a majority of his council members who backed away from a pledge to defund at 50%, realizing it wasn't feasible. But it's important to have that history and that context about Councilman Andrew Lewis as we discuss a recent revelation of the young councilman. And it's a revelation that we're starting to see a lot of progressive politicians in progressive cities have all of a sudden. And it's a realization that crime is associated with homelessness. Let's say it again. Crime is associated with homelessness. This is a fact, and it has been very obvious to anyone paying attention in cities like Seattle for years. When you have a city with a homelessness crisis, there is a criminal element that comes along with the transient population. Now, for years, it's been very controversial to say that. I've been painted as anti-homeless for saying it. Business owners downtown who are tired of the encampments, tired of the crime, have been painted as the villains for saying it, despite the fact that it's true. And for years, Seattle's city council, including Councilman Andrew Lewis, have again listened to the loudest screaming, screeching voices in the room, the small, small activist class. And they have denied for years the link between a homeless crisis and a crime crisis, because they were either that dim and oblivious to reality, or they were that beholden to the activist class that they didn't want to piss anybody off. Of course, the only thing I care about is the truth. I don't really care if people get pissed off by the truth. I just care about the truth. And the truth is, and we'll talk about the numbers that bear this out, the truth is that with a homeless crisis comes a crime crisis. Those two things are interlinked. And not only in the sense that you have people who are homeless committing crimes. We know that the drug crisis is causing a lot of the homeless crisis. People who don't have money for drugs are going to find a way to get that money, whether it's stealing or committing crimes. But also you have people who are homeless who are often the victims of crime because they're incredibly vulnerable. So after personally being vilified for years, called anti-homeless, for stating the simple truth that there is a criminal element that comes along with a homeless crisis, you can imagine my surprise when I saw a column in the Seattle Times that quoted Andrew Lewis as having an epiphany that, quote, "It is blatantly evident that a significant amount of the city's crime and disorder is attributable to conditions in homeless encampments." That is a quote in the Seattle Times from City Councilman Andrew Lewis. Andrew Lewis, the same Seattle City Councilman who a year and a half ago voted to defund a team that removed dangerous homeless encampments. Why did he make that vote? Because he cares more about activists than reality. And now all of a sudden, Andrew Lewis, who is the councilman for downtown Seattle, which houses arguably the most visible component of the homeless crisis, all of a sudden, Andrew Lewis is realizing and acknowledging, as if he's the first one to notice, that there is a link between homelessness and crime. Andrew Lewis saying, quote, "Encampments are a massive magnet for crime. On that, the data is clear." Well, no shit. The fact that you have a sitting city council member in Seattle, a city that has one of the worst, if not the worst, homeless crises in the country, a council member who is the head of the city council's committee on homelessness, a council member who has opposed at every turn sweeping dangerous homeless encampments. The fact that you now have him in April of 2022 realizing that crime is associated with homeless encampments is almost funny if it weren't so sad. Andrew Lewis apparently took it upon himself to get some data on this issue from the Seattle Police Department. He wanted to see in black and white for himself the thing that is very obvious for anyone with a brain. And what Andrew Lewis found when he requested information on shootings and crime from the city of Seattle is that 18% of all shots fired incidents in Seattle last year had some sort of tie to homelessness. Either they were committed by someone who was homeless, the victim was someone who was homeless, they happened in a homeless encampment. And shootings tied to homelessness, according to the data he collected, jumped 122% from 2020 to 2021. And when you looked at and broke down all the reasons for shootings in the city, gang violence, domestic violence, let's say a shooting committed during a robbery, shootings tied to homelessness accounted for the largest percentage. The Seattle Times notes that Andrew Lewis says he was, quote, "shaken by this data." Shaken. I'm trying to fully grasp how disconnected from reality you have to be shaken by that data. Again, city council member who heads the city council's committee on homelessness is shaken by the realization, the sudden realization, that with a homeless crisis comes a crime crisis. Any freaking business owner in Seattle could tell you that. Anyone who's walked the streets in downtown Seattle can tell you that, and I sure hope, Councilman, that you've walked the streets in your district lately. And this quote is another gem from Andrew Lewis. He said, "It was easy to say, oh, leave the poor encampments alone when there weren't so many of them and they weren't leading to this. Councilman, they have always led to this. They have always led to this. Long before you were elected, going back to the tenure of former Mayor Ed Murray, where there was a dangerous homeless encampment called the Jungle underneath Interstate 5. I spent a lot of time there as a reporter. And in 2016, when Ed Murray was mayor, 5 people were shot there one night, 2 of them fatally. So if Andrew Lewis in 2022, in his 3rd year in office, wants to all of a sudden pretend that it is frickin' news to him that there is a criminal element that comes along with homelessness, he might win the prize for most clueless politician in the country. I don't really know if it's his young age, new to politics, but when you have someone who supports funding the police, hiring more officers, and then 6 months later is saying he's going to defund them by 50%, when you have a guy who spends the first 2 years in office railing against anyone who wants to sweep homeless encampments, denying reality that there's a link between homelessness and crime, and all of a sudden, he thinks he's breaking news to us that there's a link between crime and homelessness. He's either morally bankrupt, completely out of touch with reality, or not yet qualified to be an elected official because he does not know where he stands on critical issues and he just blows with the wind. And I go back to what I said at the beginning, which is part of me wants to say, well, welcome aboard, Andrew Lewis. Welcome aboard the common sense reality train. We're happy to have you. And I am happy to have him. I'm happy to have another elected leader who's finally acknowledging what was plain to see for the rest of us for years. But it is concerning that it took him so long to get here. It is concerning that under his watch, these crises have got worse for years while people like me and others have been screaming from the top of our lungs about what was happening on our streets. We were ignored. We were vilified. We were called NIMBYs. We were called anti-homeless. And now, for whatever reason, maybe it's because there's going to be an election coming up next year. Maybe it's because the problem has gotten so, so bad that more and more people are willing to speak out. All of a sudden, Andrew Lewis wants to hop on board the train. I mean, all the things with police defunding in Seattle that we said would come true came true. And then the city council had to backtrack. All the things that opponents of some of the police reform legislation that Washington State put through last year, all the things they warned about came true. And then the legislature had to backtrack. It's almost as if these politicians should actually listen to the people who know what they're talking about before they make policy decisions. So Andrew Lewis, welcome to reality. We're happy to have you. My only complaint is that it took you so long to find us. I want to take a minute to tell you about the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. You can visit them at 1530mortgage.com. If you're looking for maybe a new home loan or you want to do a cash out refinance or a refinance to do a remodel on your home, for instance, go to 1530mortgage.com, poke around a little bit, read about them, read about their mission, their rapid ready process to try to get you into your new home or get you refinanced as quickly as possible. And you can also see the current rates at 1530mortgage.com. And if you want to call 206-207-7777, make sure to tell them that you heard about them on the Undivided podcast with Brandy Cruz. That's 1530mortgage.com or call 206-207-7777. 1530 Mortgage, NMLS number 1761573, Equal Housing Opportunity. Okay, a cautionary tale today about believing everything you see on social media. Do we need a cautionary tale? Sometimes I think it's easy to believe something if you want to believe it. You want to believe it that a conspiracy is true, so you just believe it easier. We got to try to avoid that and really look at things rationally. And I almost got tricked by this one. I will say I almost got tricked by this one because I too thought, well, I can see how that would happen. So Jim Bruner, who's a reporter for the Seattle Times, love Jim Bruner. He's a politics reporter. I actually think he does a very good job. I know I'm critical of the media, but I do think Jim does a pretty good job. He tweeted, Facebook removes congressional candidate Lauren Culp's campaign page. So if you're not familiar with Lauren Culp, he's kind of famous among certain circles nationally. He was a police chief in Republic, Washington, tiny little town in eastern Washington. He ran for governor against Jay Inslee in 2020. He lost, but he, you know, considered himself sort of the constitutional conservative, really got a strong fan base among people who were vehemently opposed to the overreach of the governor during the pandemic. And I will say, Lauren Culp has... he floats conspiracies about the election. If he, for instance, wouldn't concede the election for governor, even though he lost by about 500,000 votes, also wasn't able to point to any cases of fraud that would have changed the result. I'm one of those people who believes there are always instances of fraud in elections, but it's much different to have isolated incidents of fraud than it is to have enough fraud to overturn an election, which I'm all about. Show me the evidence, show me the proof, and I'll entertain anything if you have proof and if you have evidence, but it's not enough just to levy accusations without proof or evidence. I'm sure I'll get emails about that, but that's the fact. So anyway, Lauren Culp, you know, has really embraced, I think, sort of his position among folks further to the right. So Jim Bruner tweets this out that Facebook has removed Lauren Culp's campaign page. Lauren Culp is now running for Congress in Washington's 4th Congressional District. He is challenging Republican Congressman Dan Newhouse, who voted to impeach Donald Trump. And so Lauren Culp has been endorsed by the former president, and he's now taking on Dan Newhouse, trying to remove him from his seat. So anyway, again, Jim Bruner tweets, Facebook removes congressional candidate Lauren Culp's campaign page. I was like, oh my God. I mean, I was like, I could see I could see him tweeting or posting something on Facebook that would get him removed based on Facebook's rules. So I saw that and it rang like something that could be true. Anyway, what Jim Bruner was tweeting out, though, wasn't a Seattle Times article. It was an article from KXLY, which is a TV news station over in Spokane, Washington. The headline of this article, Facebook removes congressional candidate Lauren Culp's campaign page. And I thought, okay, this must be a legitimate story. But I went over to Facebook and Lauren Culp's page is still active on Facebook. In fact, I'll do it right now again just to make sure. Lauren Culp. Yeah, still there. 84,000 followers. And so I thought, well, that's weird. You know, here you've got Jim Bruner saying that the page has been removed and also KXLY saying that the page has been removed. And I'm like, okay, well, what did they base this off of? Well, they based it off of a tweet sent out by Lauren Culp. Lauren Culp tweeted 8 hours ago, just before my primary election in about 3 months, Facebook decides I should not be able to reach my 85,000 followers or anyone for that matter. How convenient. Free and fair elections, right? And he sends out a screenshot of an email, apparently, he got from Facebook help, an email from Facebook. And it says, hi, unfortunately, your page is going to be unpublished because it violates page's terms. Da-da-da-da-da, goes on like that. And then it says, if you think this is a mistake, please let us know. And it has a little link there that you can click. For pages you'd like to launch in the future, please first make adjustments to ensure you're providing a good user experience and meeting our policies. So Lauren Culp tweets this out. He puts this big red sticker over it that says banned. And of course, it gets like 250 retweets and people are all up in arms about it. But again, I had gone to his Facebook page. It was still there 8 hours after he apparently got this warning from Facebook. And then I read the email again. And I couldn't help but notice that some words were capitalized that shouldn't be capitalized. It just read oddly. I mean, starting with, hi, unfortunately, your page is going to be unpublished because it violates page's terms. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. I don't know that Facebook would warn him. They would probably just take it away and then he'd have to deal with the consequences of it. So I responded to Lauren Culp and I responded to Jim Bruner and I said, hey, I think this is just a phishing email. I said, there's some typos in it and I don't think they would give you a warning. So I tweeted that out, and then I go back to the original KXLY article. And again, KXLY is a legitimate news source. It's a TV station in Spokane. Guess who has now taken down their article? Yeah, it says, the page you're looking for cannot be found. So just a couple minutes after I told Lauren Culp, hey, I think this is just a phishing scam, dude. KXLY, the only outlet reporting this, has taken down their article. In truth, they built that entire article off of the word of Lauren Culp and Lauren Culp's interpretation of this email he got. Now, I don't know if Lauren Culp really thought the email was real or if he was putting it out there to try to sort of rile up his base, say he was being censored. But at this hour, his Facebook page is still up. The only news article saying that it's been taken down has now been removed. So again, just interesting how quickly people can be riled up over something that's probably fake. people, Facebook, you know, and I have my issues with Facebook and them putting everyone in Facebook jail or whatever. But first of all, this never should have risen to the stage of being a news story unless Lauren Culp's page was indeed taken down and unless this news agency actually took the time to get confirmation from Facebook. So neither of those things happened. And so there never should have been a news story done on this until some level of confirmation happened. So again, the lesson is don't be so quick to fall for something, even if you really want it to be true or even if you really think it could be true. So I'm sure you guys have seen this right after I post the podcast today. I'm hopping on a panel about the state of American journalism. It's hosted by Ari Hoffman, who's a talk radio host for KVI in Seattle, also writes for the Post Millennial. And the other panelists are going to be Andy Ngo, who is known nationally for his coverage of Antifa and anarchists and mostly left-wing rioting and protests. And also Jonathan Cho, who was a reporter in Seattle for a couple years, recently fired by Como TV in Seattle over his coverage of a Proud Boys rally. And, you know, he had also been doing some really interesting stuff on homelessness. So unfortunate that he went out in the way he did, but he's going to be on this panel. I said it on social media when I put out the information for tonight's panel that it's a little bit of an echo chamber. All of us have similar views on the state of the media and our frustrations with the press. And I kind of thought, well, gosh, maybe they should have somebody who's still in the mainstream media. And apparently they tried, but those people didn't want to join. So I guess it's an echo chamber by the other side's own making. But really looking forward to this conversation. And I talked about on the Undivided digital show yesterday how I just want people to know that my criticism of the media is not wholesale. I believe there are some tremendous journalists out there doing really, really critical work. Journalists out covering the war in Ukraine, for instance. Some of them have been killed. And my criticism of the media and the press comes from a place of knowing that they can do better and knowing that they must do better. You know, the media is here to put politicians and the powerful in check, but the media are powerful as well. And so there really needs to be people who are members of the media who are willing to hold them accountable. And we all have to hold ourselves accountable as well. And so I'm really looking forward to this panel. I was going to put some of it on the podcast today, but it's happening pretty late. So I'll try to post it to social media tomorrow if KVI allows us to do that. If not, I might air some clips of it on the podcast coming up on Friday, but really looking forward to that. I also wanted to respond to some criticism I got about the podcast from Friday. You guys know what this show is about. It is about political commentary for the anti-fringe. It is about a rejection of the fringes. And I consider that to be the fringes of the right and the left. And again, I'll revisit what my definition for fringe is. My definition for fringe is people who support fringe ideas without any care or concern for the consequences of those ideas. So for me, fringe isn't just about your ideology. It's about how you carry out your ideology. For instance, I don't think that people who support defunding the police are inherently fringe. It depends on what kind of conversations they're willing to have about that. Are you willing to have realistic conversations about the impact to public safety, what that would mean for public safety and for other people who don't want to defund? And, you know, because I also support this idea of this utopian society where we don't need as many police officers as we have. And I know some people who support divesting from police, but only when it's prudent to do so. So that's much different for me. So it's the way you go about it. And there are just some people who, the way they conduct themselves, the way they handle themselves, the way they speak to other people come off as fringe to me. You know, I talked about Marjorie Taylor Greene, for instance, on the podcast a couple weeks ago. So anyway, on Friday's podcast, I had two stories that really triggered some people because I got a lot of messages about them. One of them, I talked about the trial of four individuals who were accused of plotting to kidnap the governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer. Now, it was interesting that I got backlash for this because some people were saying, hey, this was government overreach. The FBI put them in a sting. They were never going to follow through with it. Like, how dare you speak ill about them? Which is such an odd take to me. Because first of all, my opinion on the podcast on Friday, if you go back and listen to it, is that the government did not have a solid case. And I talked about not only because two of these guys got acquitted and the jury was hung on the other ones, but I talked about this case in Michigan and then some of the cases brought against people who stormed the U.S. Capitol. And some of those cases, you know, ending in acquittals, one recently in particular. And my point in discussing that was that if the government's going to file charges against people for politically motivated crimes, the government better be sure that they have a solid case. Because every case like that that they bring and lose only fuels supporters of that fringe to say, see, this is a political attack. This never was a crime. Nothing bad happened. And so I just don't understand people who are so quick to come to the defense of, like, these guys in Michigan. The bottom line is these guys were still sitting around on the weekend smoking weed and talking about kidnapping a sitting governor. Those are not the kind of people that you should be jumping up to defend. Even if you don't believe that they actually committed the crimes that they were accused of, why are you wasting your breath defending people who would have serious conversations about wanting to kidnap a politician who they don't agree with? I don't understand the rush to defend people like that. And in the case of the many people who've been charged criminally with storming the U.S. Capitol on January 6th and associated crimes, you might believe that some of these are political prosecutions. You might believe that the government is bringing about some cases that it can't win. This latest guy who was acquitted, it was because he was able to prove that the Capitol Police kind of opened up the gates and let him in, so he felt like it was okay for him to be there. So again, you might have some arguments that the government is going after some of these people too hard. But I would put it back to you and ask, if you believe that, ask yourself how you would feel if these had been anarchists, if this had been Black Lives Matter, and they stormed the U.S. Capitol in the same exact fashion. I venture to bet that you'd be calling for them to be imprisoned for life, hung, whatever it is, have the book thrown at them. Now, this is why I've always been morally consistent on these issues when it comes to rioting, when it comes to political violence, threatened political violence. I don't care if it's the left or the right. I don't care what you're marching over. I don't care what your grievances are. If you're not peacefully protesting, I believe that you should be prosecuted if you break the law. I said that in Seattle when people were firebombing the East Police Precinct and the police union headquarters. I said it when there were riots and looting on the streets of downtown Seattle, when the same was happening in places like Minnesota and Wisconsin. And you had CNN up there calling the riots fiery but mostly peaceful. That's ridiculous. And I feel the exact same way about what happened at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. And I'm sorry, but for people who defend the Capitol rioters, I do not believe, and you cannot convince me, that you would be defending them in the same way if they were left-wing rioters. I go back to one of the very first things I said about Undivided. We have three basic tenets: people before party, ideas before identity, and actions before affiliation. I am always going to judge someone's actions without care or consideration for their political affiliation. To me, that's how I keep my moral compass in check. If you're a left-wing rioter, if you're a right-wing rioter, I don't care. I'm going to come at you the same way. Actions before affiliations. I think if more people could set their moral compass and say, here's what's acceptable to me, here's what behavior is not acceptable to me, ideology be damned, I think America would be much better off. So I know there are people who are mad about my podcast on Friday saying I was too hard on what? People who talk about kidnapping a governor and people who storm a Capitol building? If you want to be mad at me for that, that's fine. This might not be the podcast for you. This is a podcast about giving regular, everyday Americans who have been drowned out by the fringes a voice. And it is my contention that regular, everyday Americans aren't okay with threats against politicians. Aren't okay with rioting, regardless of who's doing the rioting. All right, thank you so much for listening to the Undivided Podcast. I'm going to hop on this journalism, State of Journalism panel. I hope that some of you have registered to watch it. If not, I'll try to share it on my social media pages in the days to come. Thank you so much for listening to the Undivided Podcast. If you haven't become a subscriber already, please do so. It's how we grow this mission to give common sense a comeback. You can do that in two ways: at patreon.com/undivided, or by becoming a contributor on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com.